Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. It is a fine Monday morning, April 1st here in New York City. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Good to have everyone back. We will get to the official end of LeBron's first season in L.A. because it is over.
You guys got, like, different hairstyles? I know you got
something. Mine got shorter and his is getting longer.
Yeah. Okay, I like it. A little cut, right?
Cut, a little something.
A little trim. Okay,
yeah,
I like it. Trim.
Jenna's hair looks lovely.
Thanks.
Today.
So, as does yours.
Well, let's not talk about my hair anymore.
3 days
let's
off and look how long it is.
Don't start the day lying.
No, let's not. Actually looks great.
Okay, thanks,
Jenna. Your hair looks
appreciate
great.
That. What are we doing on the show today?
You need some product, man. You need that thing like LeBron has, like cover all.
What are we doing on the television show today,
besides
America?
Besides LeBron, we'll talk about the New York Giants. They remain committed to Eli Manning. Wait till you hear for how long.
So on your radio show.
I found it
Vegas announced win totals for NFL teams next season, you know, because Vegas knows.
Oh, yeah.
The Cowboys were projected by the experts to win 8.5 games, second in the NFC East to the Eagles. This comes after the Cowboys surprised many by winning 10 games and the division last season. Keep in mind, still a number of players the Cowboys need and want to sign to extensions after a relatively quiet offseason. CeCe, how do the Cowboys take a step forward now this coming year?
I believe it has a lot to do with the offense. I like the way that the young players on their defense have progressed. But can that offensive line, can they get back to a level where maybe they're a top five offensive line? But I believe it all comes through their passing game and Dak Prescott. I know they've made some additions to the coaching staff. Kellen Moore, he's taken over and being the offensive coordinator. John Kitna is the quarterback coach. So I just believe last year Sanjay Lau took over, and in conversating with him, they were going to concentrate on the deep passing game. So I look for Dallas. Are there 4 to 6 games during the season where their passing attack can win them games? We know typically if you break down a game, that being September or December, Jenna's like, Chris, what are the keys to the game? Hey, Jenna, they got to run the ball. Zeke's got to have a great day. But I just believe this year for the Dallas Cowboys, if they're going to make that jump to where they are, because I believe they're going to have a pretty good defense, their passing game has to be more consistent. And 4 to 6 games, Dak's got to be able to win the game. And that's because they've put a lot of people close to the box, or it's a couple of games where they throw for over 300 yards.
On an NCAA tournament Monday, I think this is a very apropos question, because how will Dallas improve? The same way a college basketball team improves from one year to the next without a big recruiting class. Your sophomores and juniors get better. The guys who were there last year get better. That is Dallas's method for next season. They're not going to have any 5-star recruit coming in. They're not going to have any blue-chip McDonald's All-American that's going to be an infusion. Now, Randall Cobb is a nice addition and a bit of an upgrade, but it is about their young players, Zeke maintaining, Dak improving, Amari continuing where he was once he became a Dallas Cowboy, and those offensive linemen playing up to their salary levels. Like, I think the defense is going to be good, not a great dominant defense. I think if they feel like we're going to go into the season and win games the way Baltimore did, I think that's foolish. I don't think the defense is going to be that good, especially with the loss of Randy Gregory as one of their pass rushers. But and I know they have those two young linebackers they like a lot, but I don't think this is a top three defense. I think the way the Cowboys can continue what they were in the last half of last season is by being what they were in the last half of last season, a well-balanced team. In the last 8 games of the year, Dak looked like the quarterback he was his rookie year. They had a legitimate passing attack, so they had a top-8 offense married with a top-8 defense. That's the Cowboys' method moving forward. Do what you did last year consistently for an entire season, not just in fits and spurts, because I don't think they can sustain a 6-8 game slump from Dak like they had to start last season, because I don't think Philly's going to be dealing with the quarterback injury and their fits and starts the way they did last year.
You mentioned Kellen Moore and John Kitna. Are you worried at all about the experience within that? I mean, forget Jason Garrett, just because he hasn't had such a heavy hand in calling plays the last couple of years. Are you worried about the experience and the coaching staff on that offense?
I'm worried about the lack of play calling ability. They don't have someone on that staff that's called to play in an NFL game. And we know that Dallas, there's a lot of always noise in Dallas. It always gets hot at some point in the season. At some point in the season, it will be questioned, are these guys good enough to be Dallas Cowboys coach? You don't have any play calling experience. All these games come down in the fourth quarter. Can you make a play? Their coaching will be criticized an awful lot. And can they be able to stomach that? What's going on in Dallas? It happens every year. So Jason Garrett, I wouldn't be surprised if this year, if he leaned a little bit towards the offensive side from a staffing standpoint to be able to help them out, to be able to ease that burden. Because, yes, it's a legitimate question. I don't care if a guy, if you gave him the title and he doesn't have a resume, why wouldn't we question it? I don't know who Kellen Moore is going to be as an offensive coordinator. What's his philosophy?
Right.
What does he do when he if he's backed up? What does he do if he's a third down and short? Like, what's his theme? Well, which part of the team is he going to take advantage of? So I'll be listening to a lot of the sound bites that come out of Dallas, listening to interviews, because I really don't know, and I'm not going to guess. I know he's going to be under a lot of pressure. In that part, there will be a lot of eyes on offense coordinator and John Kitna, the new quarterback coach.
Given their restrictions salary cap-wise, because they seem so dead set on giving Dak a premature extension, along with they have to extend Amari, I think they will extend Zeke this offseason. They could wait until next offseason. And we know the situation with DeMarcus Lawrence. I like their offseason moves. I think Randall Cobb's a good move. Over the weekend, a little undercover move. They traded for Robert Quinn, a guy who could be a pass rusher opposite DeMarcus Lawrence, and they got him for a sixth-round pick to turn into a fifth-round pick. Very little compensation. George Iloka should help their safety group. So when you are bargain shopping, right, I think they've done a deep, for by my eye, I think they've done a good job with that. So those guys, those players should help a bit, but it's going to be about Dallas, the Dallas Cowboys, who were there in 2018, being as good or better than they were that year in 2019.
You make a good point as far as some of those players they picked up, because when we see teams like New England and the Rams, both of those teams from last year's Super Bowl, look at some of the veteran players that they were able to pick up. Ndamukong Suh on a one-year deal. We saw the New England got pass rush help. Mm-hmm. We saw they got the left tackle,
Trent Brown,
to be able to shore up their passing duties on that. But also, let's not forget, you have to develop a couple players, not second or third. You have to go out and there have to be a couple guys on this roster right now we're not talking about that they become part of the story. And you have to depend on that coaching staff to be able to go out and find them. Defensive coaching staff, do you have someone who can create some turnovers? That being on the front end with those defensive line, which they got a couple spots available, or on the back end with that secondary that doesn't create a lot of interception. And if we're talking about them during the season, that's because that coaching staff has gotten these guys up to speed.
And on the offensive end, I think within that building, the guy they are hoping is the person Chris is talking about is Michael Gallup, the wide receiver they took in the third round last year, the wide receiver that adds an extra dimension of speed, that with having Amari there for a full year, Cobb is a legitimate guy in the slot, that Gallup can be a guy that emerges as a potential legitimate number two receiver in this league. On the defensive side, we know who the names are. We know Van Der Esch. We know Jalen Smith. We know Byron Jones. We already mentioned DeMarcus Lawrence. They added Christian Covington, the D tackle from the Houston Texans. Michael Gallup's the guy I would pinpoint on. If the Cowboys offense takes the next step, he will have to be a big part of it, because I don't think the tight end they brought out of retirement is going to be that guy.
All right. Cowboys hoping to play even better next year. You know who else is? The Lakers coming up. Does LeBron have any chance of turning things around in L.A.? That is next on First Things First. On Saturday, we got a doubleheader for you on FS1. First, Mike Trout and the Angels face the Rangers at 4 Eastern, followed by Chris Bryant and the Cubbies taking on Christian Yelich and the Brewers. Great start for Yelich. That's your guy.
Absolutely. I was about to say, it's too early for an MVP discussion in baseball.
But if Yelich wasn't,
trying to defend his crown, man.
Great.
But if you produce the show, you can put it in there.
Time for us to go viral. So Zion Williamson's time at Duke was filled with high points. One very low light might have been when he busted through his Nike. Are you wondering where that shoe is right now? Because Zion is. The shoe has gone missing and has a reported value of $250,000.
You got any ideas, C? Some equipment manager? Maybe some fraternity prank at Duke University gone awry? What do we think here?
Quite an elaborate prank if it was.
I would say it got busted up just like their bracket. So
this is the type of thing, though. They say $250,000. If it shows up for sale somewhere, I mean, the cops will be on the case. Tough thing to sell.
Right.
Tough thing to actually get any value for.
But what are the cops going to arrest you for?
Theft.
If it ends up in your hands and it's stolen.
It's the stolen property.
Misplaced, man.
Misplaced it. I misplaced it. Like, that should have been.
Was he trying to keep it or was it a
semantics?
I don't know, man. Like, that should have been the guy. Remember the guy that stole Brady's Super Bowl jersey?
Right.
Out of Houston? Man, I don't know how it happened. I know you got me on video putting it in my bag, walking out of the locker room. Doing the whole thing.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. This one's sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. The Final Four is indeed set. Michigan State will take on Texas Tech, while the one remaining one seed, UVA, will play Auburn. Nick, now that your bracket is busted, who do you like to win it all?
Said that I thought the winner of this tournament was going to come out of the East region. Duke was my pick, but if it wasn't Duke, Michigan State. Michigan State's now there. They are looking great. But UVA, man. After getting through that scare in the first round, UVA is playing their best basketball, their first Final Four in 35 years. I think that will be the final, Michigan State and UVA, but I'll go with Coach Izzo's guys.
Yeah, of course. Stay off of Michigan State.
I knew it.
Because that's my guy and everything. I love Michigan State. I think the way they've been tested. But watch out for Auburn. They beat the three winningest programs in the history of college basketball. If you look at what they've done, Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky.
Oh,
taking them down, they're the most tested, even though they're without one of their star players.
All right, to the NFL now. The Eagles' newest addition had a bold proclamation for Carson Wentz and the rest of Philadelphia. DeSean Jackson said, "We are chasing jewelry." See, you expect the Eagles to compete for the Super Bowl next season?
Yeah, D-Jack, slow down, man. You just got the talent.
You just got there.
I mean, you just got the talent. You haven't won one game, but we're chasing jewelry. Yeah, we know that, but you don't have to say that. It wasn't even April yet.
I understand DeSean's point, though, because under Howie Roseman, this Philadelphia Eagles team has been in win now,
of
right now
you
mode.
Understand.
Well, I like the
making a proclamation in March.
I like the confidence.
Yeah.
We're now in April.
I did have Duke. Now I got Michigan State.
You know what? It's easy for you to not be wrong on the bracket. I took Duke.
This
you
year, I told you it was wide open. You're like, oh, no, Duke is Duke. Clearly
the
favorite.
We're supposed to be talking about Philly. Speaking of wrong predictions, Philadelphia and Super Bowl chances. Listen, I understand what DeSean Jackson's saying. Well, I was wrong about Philadelphia's Super Bowl as well.
There we go again. That's what I wanted to talk about.
That's what you
want
to talk about.
Those predictions.
Moving on.
Brady's going to be done.
Dusty.
Just next week.
Get this guy.
To the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo missed almost all of last season after tearing his ACL, but head coach Kyle Shanahan said Jimmy G should be full go at training camp, and he looks like he could play today. See, what do you expect from Jimmy G and the 49ers next year?
Man, I'd like to still put some weapons around Jimmy G. I'm glad he is healthy, but as far as quarterbacks, those guys who are on, you know, they're on the ascend, it's a big year for him next year. And they got to put some support around him. I believe they'll throw to their backs more than they throw to their wide receivers. They got one of the special tight ends that we've ever seen in the league. So I hope that combination grows this year.
Jimmy G, this is the year that if he's going to become more than an idea, it's this season. Jimmy G has been a nice prospect since he left college, but it's all he's been. We haven't seen him play more than half a dozen games in an NFL season yet. They need him to play the full 16 in a division with two, I believe, excellent teams in Seattle and the Rams.
Yeah, so things didn't go well since he had that one little date thing.
Oh, you're always gonna
blame
the date.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, he went out with the older lady. Something happened.
Moving on to the Lakers now.
I don't think your issue is with her age as much as profession. Go ahead, Jenna.
They announced on Saturday.
No, I'm cool with that.
That they will shut down LeBron for the remainder of the season, and that means he'll have played only 55 games this year. That's the lowest of his career and probably one of the least memorable. But according to Luke Walton, LeBron took some convincing.
Yeah, he wants to play, but it's one of those things where the medical staff has finally said, look, it's just not worth it anymore. Let's make sure you have a healthy summer. So that's the decision that was made, and you know, we'll move forward without him on the floor for the final six.
All right, CC, if you take a step back and you look at what LeBron did in L.A. in his first season, what do you make of it? How do you sort of summarize LeBron's first season in L.A.?
Well, it's not good. They're going to end up with, because this is the thing, LeBron is there, but what else do we have confidence in? And the confidence that we did have in LeBron was, man, he's not going to get hurt. His overall durability. He's so consistent. And, man, if we can just get him to the playoffs. Well, they didn't get to the playoffs. And some of the other things I believe are critical as far as entrusting each other, do they have that in moving forward? Because I believe that in selecting this team, I believe that Magic Johnson and LeBron were a part of that. So now in selecting this next coach and these next set of players, who's responsible for that? Like, who else are they going to bring in to make so that the thoughts are diverse in the room? Because last year, Magic was convinced, oh, you got to have playmakers. You got to have, man, you got to have some shooters. All right? There's nothing more important than that three-point line, shooting it and defending it. But how are they going to get this collection of players together? Are they going to be able to pull off a trade for Anthony Davis or lure another big-time free agent? So I'm concerned about it because I don't know how much confidence the Lakers have in LeBron because they've been with him for a year. They've been seeing him in the East dominate, and then now he came to the West, and the players, because I believe there will be players left over. And those younger players, like, I thought they were going to have a better bond than what they had, but they witnessed it. From a media standpoint, man, we get scrutinized a lot. Man, LeBron can be irritable as a teammate. And then they talk about, man, they had a meeting about the body language. That's LeBron James. That's what he does. He always does that. People don't like LeBron say he's pouting. Others who are fans of LeBron just say he's very demonstrative on the court. So I just believe that there's a repairing that has to be done because when LeBron came to L.A., I wouldn't say they have more confidence in the LeBron plan now than we've already wasted a year. So he's gotten hurt. How much confidence do we have in Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson? The head coach is getting ready to be fired. So to me, it's not like they're starting all over again, because you can never start all over again. But they really missed out on a great opportunity to be able to build. I thought in years 2 and 3, they would be ready to compete for a championship.
But that took into account that we thought this year they were going to get some playoff experience. That this year LeBron wasn't going to show a vulnerability with injury. Like, that isn't to say they can't compete for a championship in year 2 or 3, but how disappointing is this year? This is as disappointing as a year realistically possibly could be. They're going to win a couple more games than they won last year. It's not only that LeBron got hurt. They're going to be hiring a new coach. They're going to have almost an entirely new roster. We didn't get to see the development of the young players. Kuz, he played at least at the level he played last year, maybe a little bit better, but he ranks dead last in the NBA in wide open threes. Dead last in wide open three percentage. That ain't great. Ingram has a serious health issue, not an injury, a serious health issue that came right at the time when he was finally showing the promise that made him the number 2 overall pick. Lonzo was a guy who Lonzo Ball fans would tell you, man, his value shows up in more than the box score. You can't just look at his numbers because
what he
does
defensively. But he has to be available.
Right. But he sprained his ankle in the middle of January, never to be seen again.
Right.
And so that's the young player.
He's going the right direction because he got rid of those ugly shoes.
Well, absolutely, and maybe is going to be liberated some from his father in that company. But that's a separate issue. And then there's the roster building part. Where did this season go wrong? We could point to December 25th when LeBron James got hurt. And that is the biggest moment of the season. But you know when the season probably went wrong? In the 2-week stretch when they gave $21 million to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Rajon Rondo, and then followed that up a few days later by giving $11 million to Lance, JaVale, and Michael Beasley. There's $32 million to players, none of whom were productive for you. Now, I backed the Rondo signing. I thought it was a smart signing. And I still feel like, man, I know he can be a productive basketball player. He's been the least productive guy on a plus-minus standpoint on the entire roster. I thought he would be a good mentor for Lonzo. None of that actually showed up on the court. So how many times did this year go wrong? It went wrong in the offseason. It went wrong when LeBron got hurt. It went wrong a couple days before LeBron got hurt when he was asked by ESPN what it would be like to play with Anthony Davis. And he said, duh, that would be amazing. And evidently, whether it should have or not, that really unsettled the young players. It went wrong once Anthony Davis made his trade demand. It went wrong when all that stuff was leaked. It went wrong when LeBron came back from the injury and was as passive-aggressive as he's ever been. And he's a guy, and I know we're going to get into it, has been known for some passive-aggressive stuff. And it went wrong, I think C would argue, when they didn't shut him down 3 weeks ago, when they could have done this earlier. And so how many times did it go wrong? About once a month, every month. And how big of a missed opportunity it was. It was like this year never happened, except next year LeBron's a year older. That's what happened.
Wow. Well, that puts a period on. I mean, that's all of it right there, up to and including perhaps the team mismanaging LeBron's injury, which we haven't even gotten into when we found out later that it was far more serious than it was. But I want to talk about what you both brought up, this players-only meeting that was held. Within that meeting, one of the issues brought up was LeBron's body language and the way he sort of held himself for a stretch of games throughout the season. What do you make of the fact that the young players felt the need or the desire to bring this to his attention?
Right. The only way you can have a team meeting is everyone can speak. And you have to always make that clear. You can't have the guys that make the money or the guys who always have a speaking role, that they're the only guys that are going to talk. You have to have those guys, and each one has to be on equal footing. So you want people, younger and old, to be able to say the things that they've had problems with. And I'm sure that they had. This wouldn't be the first time that someone ever said that I got a problem with LeBron's body language. That's the way athletes are. Some people respond positive to it, and others do respond negative. I am glad that they did express that, because it's real. You have teammates, and how you're going to affect them, ultimately, do you change? Can you change? It's really up to the athlete. I just know over the years, I had to make a lot of changes, because I used to call the quarterback out. I'd be like, man, you're supposed to throw it over there. That's cover two. Like, I used to say things and do things that definitely make the guy look bad. But Warren Moon set me straight one time. And after that, I was a better leader. I thought that he should have thrown it a certain way. And I was demonstrative as far as my arms and everything, as far as, man, I thought you were going to throw it right here. And then he pulled me to the side and let me know things weren't going to be operating like that. And for me, I learned a valuable lesson. He just said, it's not good. It's not good for you. It's not good for me. You can come back. You can talk to me. I'm open to suggestions. But people will be watching you, and they won't know what we're talking about, but they'll think there's a problem between you and I. And LeBron James, he's had that. I've watched LeBron at every step along the way. His body language has always been bad.
The best part of that story that you left out is to give a little window into how Chris Carter was as a player. That Warren Moon thing where you were upset you didn't get the ball, that happened at practice, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I love that element of it. And he told
practice
you...
Practice is important.
No, I understand. And he told you, if I can repeat the story quickly, Chris, during the game, I'm going to throw it to you. So calm down a little bit, my man. But to the LeBron thing, this is something I know for a fact, that the people closest to LeBron have gotten on him about this for years. He says the same thing to them. He said to those guys, I know. I've struggled with it. I'll be better. And he just, I don't want to say he can't control it, because we all can control our own decisions, but he has not shown the ability to reel this in. The only place that I think he didn't do this was high school, where you can't get mad at your teammates when you're going to be the number one pick and these are 15, 16, 17-year-old kids. Since he's been to the NBA, starting with his rookie year, he was a guy that if someone was not in the right place or someone did not do the right thing, and later in his career where it's been really bad, where sometimes where he doesn't do the right thing, he then makes it look like, no, you didn't do the right thing. That is part of the deal with LeBron. That is not a new Laker version of LeBron. He did this with the Cavs, did this with Miami, did the first time with the Cavs. That's not an excuse, but he acknowledged it, according to Dave McMenamin's article. He said, I've struggled with this my whole career. I'll try to get better. And it's not that shocking. The immediate next game, which was a tough loss to Memphis, he was way better and then fell back into those old habits. He's going to be passive-aggressive on the court. That's just part of the deal with him, not that it makes it okay. But I do think it's good the players brought it up, and I think it's good that LeBron in the meeting didn't deny it, because anyone close to LeBron will say it's the worst look he has on the court. He's such an unselfish teammate in how he plays, but some of his gesticulations are very me, and that's not the character of basketball player that he is.
All right, so we've laid out everything that went wrong in year one. What has to happen so all of those things don't get repeated in year two of LeBron now?
Well, they got the better construction of the roster, how they're going to go about it. First, they have to be able to put the big piece in there, and that is, are they able to trade for AD, or are they able to get one of the big-time free agents? Because there's a huge difference between, if I trade for AD, it's going to cost me some of my assets, it's going to cost me some draft picks. If I'm able to get one of these big free agents, how do I manipulate the roster around Ball, Ingram, Kuz? What roles do they play in those other little spot players that are going to play between 8 to 15 minutes? can I get some more shooters? And from a big man standpoint, they have to change the direction for which they're going at. So that's the way that they get better. But it starts with either the trade for AD or talking to one of the other big-time free agents. Kawhi Leonard is the best option, from my perspective, to come to Los Angeles and play basketball with the Lakers and not the Clippers.
When you said, as an aside, they obviously have to figure out the big man thing, that is extra salt in the wound of Laker fans this year. It was revealed this weekend that the trade that sent Ivica Zubac to the Clippers didn't even call the Lakers. They didn't even know Zubac was available. The Lakers called them and said, hey, will you take Zubac and Beasley for Mike Muscala? And the Clippers just said, yes, deal, he's sold, do you? We'll hang up the phone. And reportedly, Jerry West told that story, dined over that story, and laughed about how the Lakers wanted to open a roster spot. That's why that trade happened. They could have just waived Michael Beasley. Instead, they trade away a promising young center to bring on Mike Muscala, who will not be a Laker next year. But yes, it has to start with getting another top 10 player. Unequivocally, absolutely, if the Lakers are going to have any hope next year of being something other than a team that wins 40 to 50 games and gets bounced in the first or second round, they have to bring in another star player. But then they also have to figure out, can Magic and Pelinka construct a roster?
Yeah.
Or is the other addition you have to make someone to guide them in the front office? And, oh, yeah, by the way, they got to hire a head coach. So let's figure out who that head coach is going to be. And we don't know the answer to that. We know who the name of candidates are, but we also know who's going to be available. It is like I said, Jenna, it's like this year didn't happen, except now LeBron's going to be in his age 35 season instead of his age 34 season.
And meanwhile, it's April, and LeBron James is no longer playing basketball this season for a first. Coming up, could Duke's loss change how coaches build their teams now moving forward? That's still ahead on First Things First.
Hey, guys, it's Nick Wright. A quick word from our friends over at Indochino. Did you know that made-to-measure suits fit better compared to generic off-the-rack suits? Many say that a man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. Indochino is exactly what you need. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from, not to mention the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. So here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom of your choice located across the U.S. and have them take your measurements personally. Or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric, both inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. And then kick back and relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in just a couple weeks. This week, our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering the code FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. Again, that's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deals for a premium made-to-measure suit. Once you go custom, you don't go back.
Welcome back to First Things First. It's been an incredible season for the Milwaukee Bucks. They have the league's best record, arguably the league's best player, and presumptive favorite for MVP. They also have a general manager, and that's John Horst, and he joins us now. And we're the best general manager in the league. How about that? We'll throw that out there. It's great to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jenna.
Go ahead, Jenna.
John, if someone told you back in October your team is going to have the best record in the NBA with a couple days left in the regular season, what would you have said?
I agree.
Yeah,
I knew.
Obviously. Yeah. Really? Are you surprised with where you guys are and how you've managed to take what you did last year and build so far upon it that you're in this position towards the end of the regular season?
Maybe surprised that we're the best team in the NBA, best record, where we're at this point in the season. But the fact that we were going to improve, that we were going to take steps forward, doesn't surprise me at all. We had some great offseason additions, and starting with Coach Budenholzer, some of the roster things with Pat Connaughton and Brooke Lopez and Dante DiVincenzo. So, and Giannis has taken a tremendous step, and so not surprised that we've improved.
Can you take us through some of the processing? Because you guys thought you had some good pieces. You made some good decisions, but none better than when you had the opportunity, because that was a coveted job as far as Milwaukee. But when you got Coach Bud there, what did it unlock? Because there was something you potentially sensed in the interview that this is the guy.
Yeah, so Chris, I mean, we knew we had the best job. We with Giannis as the player and in the roster that we had, we lost to Boston in a 7-game series. We knew we had the best job. And so we were really intentional and diligent in our process. And spending time with Bud, it was clear that he was going to be able to unlock the talent in our roster. From an offensive perspective, defensively, he was really focused on improving our rebounding. You know, we went from one of the worst rebounding teams in the NBA last year to the best team, rebounding team in the NBA this year. So we really felt like we could take big steps offensively and defensively. And he just style of play would fit. Having a guy like Giannis that can create so much space and so much opportunity for everyone else on the team, Bud would be the right coach for that.
Well, and you also saw, listen, that Atlanta Hawks team that won 60 games had a lot of really nice players, but did not have a superstar. They had Paul Millsap, Al Horford are nice players. Korver was having an amazing year. I think they had 5 All-Stars. But to bring that template to a team with arguably the best player in the league, now all of a sudden you have a real championship formula, but that needed Giannis to take the next step. Giannis has improved every single year of his career. He has gotten bigger. First few years, he was actually still growing height-wise, and now he's gotten bigger bulk-wise. When you saw Giannis this offseason, after coming off what was an All-NBA caliber season, did you see this year coming from him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's progressively gotten better every single year, physically, like you said, from a skill set. Bud is the right coach for him, so we have the right system. We've put in the right talent around him. And he's really improved in every area. Giannis has career highs almost across the board. His stats across the board are top 20 in the league from offensive and defensive metrics and in every category. And the guy's only playing 33 minutes a game. You know, I think he's the only player in the league in history to average 26 and 12 or 26 and 13
in less than
33 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's doing right now. And so, yeah, I mean, we know how special he is and how lucky we are to have him.
We know where his numbers are. We also know where Harden's numbers are right now. Make the case for Giannis being this year's MVP.
Yeah, to me, it's really clear. So most valuable player to a team. We've got the best team. We've beaten Houston twice. We've got the best team in the East, the best team in the league right now, record-wise. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. But Giannis, offensively and defensively, is dominating this league. He's averaging 26 and 13, like we just said. He's also the only guy that's averaging over a block and a steal a game to add on to those stats. And so, offensively, he has a significant impact on our team, and defensively, he dominates the league as well.
Can you take us in, with Giannis potentially being the face of the NBA? We hear about how much weight gain he's added. We hear about him adding strength in the weight room. Take us through like a day in Giannis. Because we know superstars, but he's very, very different in his day-to-day approach in trying to be the best player that he can be.
He's a pretty simple guy. And I'm blessed that I've been able to be around him for a long time now. He loves his family first. So he's family first. He comes to work early. He stays late. And he goes back and spends time with his family. And so he's all family and basketball, and it's not much more complicated than that.
There are some great, maybe apocryphal Giannis stories from his early time in the league. There's the story of when he first tasted smoothies that he then tweeted about, him taking food home to go that he couldn't believe was free, him sending the story I want to know if it's true is, and if it is, if you can elaborate on it, did he really send all his money home one day and then have to run to the stadium back and catch a ride with a team, with a fan? And if not, do you have a great Giannis story to share with us?
I don't know if I'll comment on that one specifically, but he'll probably get a little upset at me at this. But so Giannis, we basically had to teach him how to drive. I mean, he had spent some time driving a little bit when he was in Europe, obviously illegally. But when he came to the U.S., a couple of the guys that I worked with, we had to spend time with him teaching him to drive. So we're on the way to his place. He's driving my car. I'm riding. It's not a driver's ed vehicle. And he's like, just doesn't even brake to go into a left-hand turn. So we're going about 30 miles an hour, and he just makes this left turn. I'm like freaking out, like grabbing him, trying to get the brake. So he's an unbelievable guy. Again, for us to have him in Milwaukee and for us to have him this entire time has been great. And the things that he's doing is really special. Knowing the person he is makes it even more special.
We'd be remiss if we didn't ask about his ankle, how it's doing, what your game plan is for the next couple of days and for the remainder of the season with him.
Yeah, Jenna, great question. He's fine. He's going to be fine. The ankle, he's just kind of re-injured it here a few times, kind of stepping on feet, bad luck. And so really we just need to get the strength up. And so he may play tonight. If not, he'll definitely play on this trip.
I would imagine he wants to probably play, right?
Oh, yeah, no, he's extremely hard guy to rest or to hold out for any reason. And now he does have a real ankle issue, and so we've got to be very careful with that.
Giannis has been very, very consistent as far as he wants to be in Milwaukee. He doesn't want to play with anyone else. doesn't want to chase rings and everything, wants to bring a championship to Milwaukee. How do you go? Is it too early to start talking about Giannis and his future in Milwaukee with him being so open about this is my home?
You mean with him, is it too early?
Yes.
No, we talk every day. We have open dialogue, and he's a part of, like, he's a resource. He's a resource to building this team. Coach Budenholzer is a resource to building this team. So Giannis and I talk about the roster. We talk about the types of guys that he wants to play with, the types of fit that we want to have. And no, we talk every day.
And I would imagine part of that, part of the reason you guys do something like sign Eric Bledsoe to an extension is not only because he's having a great year and he's been awesome, but to show the investment, to show that, listen, we are not going to let one of your best teammates get away from us this offseason or in a future offseason. And we are trying to build something sustainable in Milwaukee. I would argue not that different than what they built in San Antonio. That's the model I think the Bucks are probably looking for. Smaller market, superstar that doesn't necessarily need all the attention in the world, but might be the best player in the world, like what they had with Duncan. But the things those Spurs teams did, obviously, was win championships, was make deep playoff runs seemingly every year. In the Eastern Conference, which team do you think is the toughest matchup? Having watched this team all year, what's the team that you think presents maybe the most trouble for you guys?
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, we got to get out of the first round, something that we haven't done in 17 years here in Milwaukee. And so that first round series is going to be tough. I think Orlando and Miami and Charlotte and those in Brooklyn, who we play tonight, those teams are battling and they're all playing well. If we're lucky enough to do that and we're able to get out, you know, you're into a second round that's really, really good. Boston maybe underachieved a little bit at points this year, had some injury issues, but a team that beat us in seven games last year. Philadelphia, with all the talent they have and in the way that they're playing, I think it could be extremely tough. And then Toronto's the best team. They've had the best sustained success left in our conference to this point. So I think no matter who we play, it's going to be a tough matchup, and I think we'll be ready for it, though.
Are you guys kind of worried about the MASH unit that has become your team in the last week or two? You guys are pretty beat up at not the best time to
She's
be
going back
beat
to injuries.
Up. I'm sorry. I want you to be healthy and happy, hitting that stride for the playoffs. But you guys are pretty beat up.
Yeah, no, we are. So last night we had seven guys out with injury.
Yeah.
That's over 50% of our roster, basically. And so for us, I think we're being cautious. We have real things that are going on, but I think everyone has real things that are going on at this point in the season.
Sure.
We're fortunate that we have a three-game lead in the Eastern Conference right now, a three-game lead overall to have the number one seed.
It's a little bit of a cushion.
Yeah, so we have a little cushion, and so we can be cautious and careful with these things. If we were playing Game 7 of the NBA Finals today, we probably have six guys that were healthy yesterday. And so I think we're managing it. We're taking care of the guys. They have real issues, and we're trying to get through it and get us to the point where when we start the playoffs, we're as healthy as possible.
You opened the door for me there, so I'm going to walk through it. Speaking of the NBA Finals, if you guys get there, if you get through all those checkpoints that you mentioned, how does this team match up with Golden State?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've had, if you look at what we've done over the last couple of years, not just this year, we've played Golden State tough. They're the best team. They're the reigning champion. It'll be an unbelievable opportunity to play those guys and a challenge to play those guys if we could do that. But I think we match up well. I think we have the best player in the league in Giannis. I think he's the MVP. I think he's the defensive player of the year. And I think if you have the best player, you always have a chance. And so start with that. We have a great coach. And Giannis has a great supporting cast that fits him. We have an all-star in Chris Middleton. I think Eric Bledsoe could have been an all-star. And so I think we have as much talent and as well coached as anyone in the league. And I think we have the best player.
Tell us about the Fiserv Forum, your new arena. Tell us about it a little bit.
No, Fiserv is awesome. So we've had 33 sellouts this year. Our average attendance is actually over capacity. We've been selling standing room only tickets all season.
Nice.
It's got great sight lines. It's great concourse and food, which all the fans love. It's been a really
Who came
really
up with the court design? I like that. Yeah, the colors on the court and everything. It's really
Nice. The marketing side, Dustin Godsey and Peter Fagan, who runs our team, the team president, they do a great job with that stuff. We actually have three courts. Three different kind of variations. Or we've played on three different variations throughout the last year and a half. And so they do some fun stuff with the courts and jerseys, and it's been great.
And this was a big deal for you guys in that community. I remember when they did the ribbon cutting or the groundbreaking.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. But to have the right timing, when you get arena funding passed, you don't know what the team's going to be like. You know, years down the road.
Yeah.
But to have Fiserv Arena come into play at the same time Giannis and this season's happening, for you guys, from the non-basketball, just the business perspective, has to be ideal timing.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, it's been an unbelievable ride to just to see the way that Milwaukee's grown, the downtown area, the arena itself, the developments around it, and to have a team that's number one in the league and have a player like Giannis, and again, a team that's coached by Bud, it's been really a lot of fun to be in the downtown area.
It's been exciting covering you guys this season. A fun team with a really bright playoff future, and we're really excited. So thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you guys.
So good luck.
Thank you.
Take a break.
Thanks, Chris.
Much more First Things First right after this. Welcome back to the show. Super Bowl champ Chris Canty joins us. Chris, good morning.
What a weekend for our friend Chris Canty. Alma mater, which has always been a basketball school, if we're being honest.
Okay.
Virginia makes its first Final Four in 35 years.
Yeah, so
congratulations, man.
So much shade coming.
What do you mean?
I mean, you know what? Welcome, I understand. You know why he's doing this, CC?
I'm just happy for
you. Because he thought his school was the real orange and blue when it comes to athletics in the ACC. Just had to let him know it's not going down
Listen, I'm happy you guys
made your... We're in Minnesota. We're going to Minnesota.
He's also a Mets fan.
We can't make the Final Four every year at Syracuse. Like, what is it, two of the last five or something? I'm happy for you guys.
Okay.
It's a good win for Tony Bennett and the crew.
Someone see?
Congrats, man.
All right, let's talk football then.
Would you just a bad guy.
That make you feel better?
Just a bad guy.
Eli Manning. Hey, people thought it was a mistake when the Giants didn't draft his replacement last spring. People thought they'd never make that mistake again. Those people are not happy today. Looks like the Giants are doubling down on the two-time champ in Eli Manning. Reports are the Giants are considering keeping Eli, not just for 2019, but for 2020 as well. Kenny, how surprising is this?
I'm hoping that this is just posturing by Dave Gettleman to throw people off the scent of the Giants being interested in one of these quarterbacks at the top of this year's draft. Because that report right there, when they're talking about Eli Manning not only being the guy for the entire 2019 season, but being your starter going into 2020, that's crazy to me. And the thought of having to extend him in order to do that because he's going into a contract year, that's asinine. Like, there's no way that you can justify doing that for Eli Manning based on the production that he's given you the last several seasons. I thought what they did last offseason was an attempt to be able to put the talent around him so Eli Manning, you could get the best out of him. But clearly, Eli Manning's no longer a quarterback that can elevate the play of everybody around him. You gave him Saquon Barkley. You retooled the offensive line. You had one of the best receivers in the National Football League in Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, at some point, we just have to stop running out of excuses for Eli Manning. And I know that's tough coming from me because I'm a former teammate of Eli, won a Super Bowl with Eli. But I realize that this is not the same quarterback that won Super Bowl 46 MVP. It's just not. The Giants have lost 50 games in the last 5 years, and baked into that is an 11-win season. So that just shows you how bad this team has been. Four of the last 5 years, double-digit loss seasons?
Right.
That's unacceptable by any standard.
But you can't dismiss this for this one reason. When they didn't draft a quarterback in 2018, it was almost a guarantee we would be in this position in 2019. The quarterback's a position that you can see a year out on. And by that I mean, this year, if they do not draft a quarterback or trade for Rosen, then of course Eli will be the quarterback in 2020. Like, unless the season goes so far to hell that you end up with the number one pick, you draft Tua, then you don't know. If you don't draft your guy or get your guy a year early, you don't know who's going to be there the next season. So whenever you leave the cupboard bare on who's going to replace your aging veteran, you know you run the risk that the following year, the aging veteran is just going to be an even more aging veteran. So I don't think it's just posturing. I think it's the Giants recognizing we might not be able to trade up for a quarterback. We might not want to pay the price to move into the top three if that's necessary. Maybe the Patriots will trade the 32nd pick for Rosen if he comes available and we don't want to trade the 17th. Like, there is an element of course it's possible that Eli's there in 2020, which when a lot of people think he shouldn't have been there in 2017 is going to feel devastating, but that is the situation that the Giants find themselves in.
I'm with you. All right, and I don't have to apologize because I didn't play with the Giants. And I'll let you know, I watched the whole season. Eli didn't lead y'all to no Super Bowl. He happened to be driving the car in those critical moments, but that was a very, very good football team. And this team that he has now, I would say there's not one area that they are better besides their running back than that team that won a Super Bowl. So what we're looking at is two totally different things. So I don't have to apologize. I believe Dave Gettleman and what they're doing is I believe they're just fooling the public. I believe this is all just a bunch. Because I looked at their roster. They ain't got five players that I would make as a starter in 2020. Like, I'm looking up and down. I'm like, oh, okay. All right, I might get the guard, Hernandez. I might let him, okay, because he's new and everything.
Ingram.
The tailback is definitely going to be there. Nate Solder, I paid him a lot of money at left tackle. He's going to be there. And there's a couple guys on the defense with a roll of the dice. They can play in 20, mm-hmm. let alone Eli. So I'm not going to be moved by this. I'm not going to allow the Giants with the sixth pick, with a couple quarterbacks potentially with the first-round grade. And let's not forget, they might use that second first-round pick to be able to draft someone or that second-round pick to try to trade. I believe they are going to get a quarterback because it doesn't make sense for someone in the Giants organization to leak in April, into March, hey, you know something? We like Eli so much, he's going to be even our quarterback in 20. So I'm not going to be concerned about this. I'm not going to be concerned at all. I believe this is just normal NFL pre-draft posturing. I don't believe Eli Manning will be the quarterback in 2020.
Chris Caney, who would you like to see be the quarterback for this Giants team? It looks like it's going to be Eli 2019 unless they get a young guy to sit behind him or Rosen, but it looks like those are the options right now. Trade for Josh Rosen or try to draft one of the top two guys in the draft.
Well, I love Dwayne Haskins, and we have been talking about him on this show for months now. I mean, in terms of what you're looking for at the quarterback position, his ability to be able to process information, I think it makes a whole lot of sense for the Giants to get their hands on him, because I see him developing into one of those guys that can be a force multiplier, somebody that can be a difference maker, somebody that doesn't have to have everything around them perfect mm-hmm. in order for your team to have a chance to compete week in and week out. But ultimately, it's going to be about Dave Gettleman having a conviction about a guy, whether he's trading for Rosen, Daniel Jones' name been thrown in there, Drew Lock, Kyler Murray. This is all about what Dave Gettleman wants. I mean, he's the guy that's developing the plan in terms of how to lead this team into the future. And so, to me, I think that the thing that the Giants have to focus on is being able to get their hands on a young quarterback. I think that's why you made the Odell Beckham Jr. trade a few weeks ago. I mean, you got the draft capital back in order to position the franchise to get a guy that can be a difference maker. Because Eli Manning, he's 38 years old. And Pat Shurmur said it at the owners' meeting. At some point, Eli Manning ain't going to be playing quarterback for the New York Giants. Going into the last year of his contract, I think this is the right offseason for the Giants to address the quarterback position.
Yeah, I think they should address it with Haskins. I don't think that they should trade for Josh Rosen. I do believe Josh can fit some places. I do like the price they're going to pay but for him as far as the fixed salary for the next several years. But I don't like the type of football. I don't believe his body's big enough, and I don't believe he throws the ball with enough velocity to be successful on the East Coast. Haskins, born and raised in New Jersey, spent most of his time as a youth in Maryland, so he's played a lot of cold football, played in cold elements last year at Ohio State. So it's just not the prospect. It's the style. I believe he has a personality. He's very quiet, very family-oriented, not high maintenance, and I believe that would suit him well. He's got a nice little smile to him. I believe that would be nice on Madison Avenue, but ultimately he's got the big gun that can throw the ball in the windy conditions here. That's something that Eli benefited from. He's got a big time arm. That's the reason why he's been able to have a long career. But Haskins is the right fit, not only personality for this market, but how he throws the football.
All right, we'll take a break. Cannon, we'll see you a little bit later on the show. Coming up, hey, can the Sixers compete for an NBA title this season? That's next on First Things First.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Back here, first things first, FS1 NBA insider Chris Broussard joins the show. Welcome.
Welcome back,
Chris. Thank you. It's always good to be with you guys.
Good to have you here. All right, we will get to Joel Embiid in just a second, but first, a little March Madness. Zion, watch this, the amazing block. Had to actually duck his head so he didn't hit the head on the backboard.
Duke lost, but it wasn't on Zion. Gave you 24, 14, 3, and 3 as far as blocks and steals. Filling up the box score this entire tournament just wasn't enough from the other guys.
Zion, when you bump into Nick Wright, he gave you a B.
He gave you a B. There's context for it.
I'm just saying, you're going to see him. He's going to be like, oh, man, I've been cheering for you the whole time.
I have. I can still give him a fair grade. What's happening here, Jenna?
All right, Clippers, Grizzlies, Ivica Zubac getting up to slam home the alley-oop.
Yeah, that's a guy who's playing for the wrong L.A. team. It's unbelievable. Did you read the story that said the Clippers didn't even call and ask about him? Yes. Magic just called and they were like, yes, we'll take him.
Yes.
Hawks,
yes.
Bucks, and Trae Young, man, makes him the miraculous buzzer beater to top the Bucks in overtime. How good has he been?
Chris Broussard has votes on these things.
Rookie of the year. Right now I'm leaning Luka, but I'm going to do my intense study before I put in my official.
I hope Trae, your colleagues and everything are waiting until the end to vote.
Smart.
Because the last 30 days, Trae's made a big push.
Oh, my God. I love him. I loved him coming out.
And I think you like him because you think light-skinned people.
He's helping. He helped me. We're coming back, Chris.
Oh,
we rapping,
Clay Thompson.
Right. We rapping, too.
That Jesse guy didn't do y'all no good.
Oh, come on.
On to the Sixers.
I wasn't claiming
we
him.
We have to move on now. We have to. Sixers trying to become the first non-LeBron champ. Only CeCe could say that. The first non-LeBron champs in the East this decade, and Jimmy Butler thinks they can do it. He told The Athletic, we can do something special. We talk about it every single day. We got to be the ones to go out there and do it. And the crazy thing is, I know that we're capable of doing it. All right, Broussard, what is the ceiling for the Sixers team?
The ceiling is the NBA Finals. I don't think they could beat Golden State or whoever. I'm assuming it's Golden State out of the West. But they could get to the Finals. Now, that said, I think they're the third best team in the East. I like Toronto and Milwaukee better. But it wouldn't surprise me if Philadelphia got one of them in a series and beat them.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing, and I've said this on here before, the one team that I think Philadelphia does not need to see or want to see is Boston.
And
they've won, I think, 17 of the last 20 against Boston. Now, Boston's a mess. They lost 5 of 7.
Sixers, okay. The only team Boston does actually want to see.
Right, right. But so I don't expect that to happen. Right now, Philly's the third seed, Boston's fourth.
The bracket's falling perfect for Philly.
Right.
It would have to be the Eastern Conference Finals to play them.
But here's the thing. If they meet in the conference finals, that means Boston's beating Milwaukee in the second round. And they're playing well. So if they're playing well, feeling good about themselves, the chemistry is there, I think they beat Philly. If they don't have to meet Boston, I think they got a good shot.
But I'm going to take a step further than you. You said their ceiling is the NBA Finals. Similar logic to what you had with Boston. If Boston gets to the Eastern Conference Finals, it will mean they have figured it out, they're playing well. If Philly gets to the NBA Finals, meaning they have beaten Toronto in the second round, and then either Milwaukee or Boston in the third round, it will mean that what we saw rear its ugly head in the playoffs last year, them playing 4-on-5 offensively, that they have found a way to solve it, that they are either coaching around it or they have changed their rotation late in games as such to where it's not an issue. It will mean Joel Embiid is playing the way we have seen him play for stretches this year, where he has been for weeks at a time the most dominant player in the league. If they get to the NBA Finals, their ceiling is to win the championship.
You think they could beat Golden State?
Yes. I don't think they, like, this is, as you would say, I'm not saying I would pick them.
Right.
I'm not saying they would be my pick, but would I be shocked if we have a Golden State-Philly NBA Finals, if it goes something like, okay, we're going to play, you're not going to guard Ben Simmons, we're not going to guard Draymond Green, you have no one to check Joel Embiid, we have length to put on Steph and Clay. Like, there is a situation where I could see, oh, yeah, Philly can be a tough matchup for Golden State. Neither team is deep. Neither team likes to go to their bench. They like to play their starters as much as possible. So what's their ceiling? The ceiling for the Sixers is to win the championship this year.
Would you say that about, quickly before you, Chris, would you say that about any team that wins the East?
No, I'd say that about Philly, and I'd say it about Milwaukee. I don't think Toronto can beat him in a series.
Even though his name is on the marquee, the voice that you just heard is not the reflection of the opinions of this show. All right? So for me, I believe because Philly is not a very good road team, to me, the ceiling for them is the Eastern Conference Final. And I think that if you don't watch, if you look at Philly's roster, outside of their starting lineup, they got a lot of question marks. And if I were to go to the finals, who is J.J. Redick going to guard? Like, how are they going to hide him on the court for Philadelphia?
Well, I think they'd have him guard Draymond.
Then you can post him up.
But now
that's the worst.
I hear
that's the worst matchup
right,
for him.
And I hear you on Draymond, but he shot like 40% from three in the last month
2 weeks?
Or so.
Oh, the last month? Okay.
Roughly, yeah, so he's been hitting. I'm not saying he's a good shooter, but he has shot better from there. And I think you can put Cousins on Embiid. Not that he's going to shut him down, but at least you have a big body to put
see,
on.
See, and I think that's the way to get Philly in the bonus immediately. I think DeMarcus Cousins get frustrated, start racking up fouls, and then Philly goes to the bonus, and they are an outstanding free throw shooting team. That's yeah. the other benefit Embiid gives them that you've pointed out a bunch, see, is not just him getting to the line, second most of any player in the league, but him if, racking up fouls on the opposition.
If he's getting that whistle, we have not seen Joel Embiid and the NBA whistle in the playoffs. Are they going to give him the Shaq? Are they going to give him those legendary where they're not going to allow you to just beat him up the way they do NBA centers? And I like the fact you're saying Boogie Cousins because Philly doesn't do as much pick and roll as they do as much dribble handoff. Boogie Cousins have a problem with the pick and roll, doesn't have as much problems with Philadelphia the way they run their offense. But I think and I think that we're this team just getting together. They've changed twice this year in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Them getting to the Eastern Conference Final, I think that's a great mark for them. Try to get their roster re-signed for next year and then make a push for a championship.
Chris, we had Antoine Walker on the show last week, and he said he thinks this starting five in Philadelphia is the best, if not the second best starting five in the league and definitely could compete with anyone. Where would you?
On paper, it's a great starting five. I mean, everybody loves Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler, J.J. Redick. I mean, it's a nice starting five, Tobias Harris, on paper, but there's some issues there. I mean, obviously Ben Simmons with the shot. That's all he should work on this summer. But what that does is if you notice a lot of times, especially late in games, he's playing on the post because they can't have him outside because nobody guards him. What does that do? That forces Embiid out to shoot threes.
And listen, and that was their issue last year in the playoffs against Boston, is you either had Simmons on the post, and if you didn't, then his guy was just sagging off him 6 feet and clogging up the lane.
And again, it pushes Embiid out because you can't have two guys in the post.
And it's why they absolutely could get bounced in the second round. But if we mention the NBA Finals, I just want to put something on its head. You mentioned who's J.J. Redick going to guard. My question is this. Who's Steph going to guard? Because if they may play the finals and Steph, okay, we're going to have Steph guard J.J., Steph is going to be spending so much energy running off screens, just trailing, because they're going to run J.J. Redick off a half dozen screens of possession.
I'll take my chances.
Okay, because that's the only
– the one thing the Golden State does is they're not as susceptible to the type of offense that they run that way because they switch to 1-5. They switch better than any team. That's one of the reasons why they're so good defensively. So Steph presents more problems. Klay presents more problems than J.J. Redick running off a screen. How many points J.J. going to score? Well, even if he gets hot.
Just real quick on that, I agree with you. They're going to switch. The reason Philly, because of the trades of Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler, to me is so interesting against Golden State is if Steph gets switched on anyone other than J.J. Redick, then they will clear out to that side of the court, get that guy the ball. Because Steph cannot guard off the dribble anyone else on Philly's roster. Ben Simmons too big, Embiid obviously, and Tobias Harris or Jimmy Butler. So he's going to have to try to stay with J.J. Redick. It's just a problem, I think, for Golden State that if we were to see that those NBA Finals, they would have to address.
All right, Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, could Duke's loss change how coaches build their teams moving forward? That's next on First Things First. FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the big personalities on the big stories. We get you started right here, First Things First. You can catch it on Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern, only on FS1. Hey, it's time for us to go viral. Our very own Chris Carter accomplished a lot in his Hall of Fame career with the Vikings, but this weekend he got to check another thing off his bucket list, driving the jumbo golf cart at the Vikings Museum. Blowing kisses to his
fans. Is that what you're doing?
I assume.
Yeah.
How's the
Vikings
weekend?
Nation. I had a great time. They have a tremendous museum.
Yeah.
They have a performance center, state-of-the-art, new practice facilities. Minneapolis is great. So, Final Four fans. Oh man, you're gonna love Minneapolis.
See, you Final Four is in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your guy Coach Izzo is there.
Yes.
You've got to go, man.
I don't know. I'm just checking on some stuff. I'm a little busy, Nick.
I know you're a little busy, but you can jump out Friday after the show.
You know something? I don't have the leisure of getting sick like Jenna or taking Fridays off like you.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
First of all, I've not been sick at all this year.
I used to have this thing people said I wasn't dependable, so now I just try to be the most dependable at my job. You know, just normal, just basics when you wake up. Not a real, real big goals, just little goals.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah, I might go one day off.
Okay, there it is. There it is. There it is. I was waiting for it.
I was trying to have a couple of spicy comments so I can get fired by Friday.
Stories to start your morning by your tongue, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. The Eagles' newest addition had a pretty bold proclamation for Carson Wentz and the rest of Philadelphia. DeSean Jackson said, "We are chasing jewelry." See, expect the Eagles to compete for the Super Bowl next season?
Oh, DeSean will have some jewelry on. I mean, he wears a lot of jewelry and
nice
everything.
Jewelry.
But D-Jack, slow down, bro. I do believe they're the favorite to win their division, do believe they're in the playoffs, and I do believe they have one of the best quarterbacks in Carson Wentz. So, yes, but let us tell the story, D-Jack. All right, since you left Philly, they won a Super Bowl, bro. Let's just small goals to start out. He's going to play a big part in them trying to get back there, though.
The Eagles are in a good position, I believe, because there's two divisions in the NFC this year that preliminarily it looks like there's only two teams that are realistic candidates for. It's the NFC East with the Cowboys and the Eagles, and the NFC West with the Rams and the Saints. I'm sorry, the Rams and the Seahawks. So there's other divisions you could kind of list them 1-4 in any area. So I like the Eagles in that regard, and I like what Howie Roseman's doing as far as keeping his foot on the gas after the Super Bowl, continuing to trade future draft picks to players help them right now. But let's see how healthy Carson Wentz is, because they don't have the backup quarterback they used to have in Philadelphia anymore.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.